Thanks for joining us for the latest Grazia Life Advice podcast. I'm Lottie Jeffs, and it's so good to be with you. This time, someone who has been a model, a political party advisor on LGBT rights, a documentary maker, and continues to be a trans activist and campaigner.
I'm Monroe Bergdorf, I'm an activist, and I'm this week's guest on the Grazia Life Advice podcast.
As an activist and campaigner very much in the public eye, Monroe has great advice about keeping yourself safe, rising above angry social media confrontations, and not being distracted from your big goals in life.
Is a process, and I think it really involves your support network, because if your support network isn't on the same page as you, you can often find yourself being supported with things that you don't really want to do.
Coming up, Monroe's recollections of first transitioning and how she feels now about the advice she got from older people in the trans community.
But I kind of wish that I'd listened to my queer elders a lot more at the beginning of my transition, because a lot of what they told me would happen should I not be connected with myself, that it wouldn't put me in a good position emotionally and spiritually, physically or mentally.
And later, something too few people seem to understand: the boundaries you need to put in place to have a respectful difference of opinion.
There has to be mutual respect there. If we meet each other with respect and it's respectful and they're open to changing their mind, I'm open to seeing the other side, then we can have a conversation.
It was so interesting hearing Monroe's life advice. She was recovering from a cold at the time that we spoke, so was worried that she wouldn't be quite on point, but I think she really, really was. So I hope you enjoyed the chat. Hello, Monroe, and thanks so much for joining us. How's your day going?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. I've kind of got this lurg that's going around, so I've been recovering from that, but I feel really good about life in general.
Yeah.
So yeah, thanks for having me.
What kind of ill person are you? Are you like a attention seeking person that needs loads of care, or are you like, just leave me alone, I just need to be in my bedroom?
Very much the latter. I kind of feel very sorry for myself. I go through waves of feeling very overwhelmed, very like I can't deal with anything that I usually can deal with if I'm at full health. But yeah, just very kind of like shut myself away, don't talk to anybody, ignore all my messages, kind of, and then come out in a burst of glory once
She's
I'm
back.
At full health. Yeah. Make the comeback soon.
Amazing. Okay, so let's crack on with your first piece of advice, which is remember that how people treat you is often a reflection of how they see themselves. Very interesting.
Mm.
Could you talk to us a bit about this?
Yeah, I think that this is generally advice that everybody can take. But for me personally, the way that my life has gone means that a lot of people have opinions of me that they don't actually really know me as a person. So when I'm being told about myself, either on social media or if I'm seeing people talk about me and they don't think that I can see it, or if the papers are saying things about me that aren't true or devoid of context, I just remember that, you know, there's often motive behind the way that people treat other people, or it's about the fact that there's something within them, whether it's trauma and people that haven't dealt with their own trauma just kind of projecting it onto you, or it can be anger, or it can be manipulation. There's a lot that goes on in the media with dog whistle politics, and you know, people's lack of education being weaponized to further an agenda. So there's loads of reasons why people can react to you as a person or misconstrue you and misconstrue your personality. So I often try to remind myself that what people say and what people do is largely an amalgamation of where they're at, and sometimes it really doesn't have anything to do with you, so I try not to take it personally.
Does that degree of empathy make it easier though to deal with? Or do you sometimes find that it's actually even more work for you to have to be so generous in your response to people's?
I mean, I do, I do think that, you know, we need to be practicing more empathy as a society in general. And I do think, you know, that there's always a reason why people behave the way that they do. It doesn't really take that much out of my, you know, out of my energy bank to taking into consideration that, you know, hurt people hurt people. And at the end of the day, a happy person isn't going around making other people's lives harder because they're more focused on healing and making space for other people. So yeah, when somebody gets angry at me for being myself, my brain does instantly go to the fact, oh, this is an unhealed person. This is someone that's holding on to something, that's angry about something else, and angry about the fact that I'm not angry about the same thing that they are. So I think it makes it easier for me, to be honest. I don't need to heal them. That's on them. That's their responsibility. But I do need to acknowledge that hurt people, angry people add more anger to the situation. And anger can be a positive thing. But if the anger's coming with a will to cause more damage or without resolve, I think anger with resolve is often a very productive emotion. I mean, that's, you know, activism at the end of the day. I mean, we're all angry about misogyny, we're angry about racism, homophobia, but we want resolve as well. But if you just want to breed more anger, then that's a very unproductive emotion. And that just kind of signals to me that, you know, there's healing that needs to take place there.
Absolutely. Munro, what is your second piece of advice for us today?
My second piece of advice is self-care as a continuous practice before you burn out, not just when you're burning out. And this is something that I really need to take more advice and I need to heed
this
it.
This feels like it's coming from a very personal experience.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, I think it's why I'm in this situation now, and I'm coming to you not so live, but very directly, not that well. So, I have a tendency to work myself into the ground and then be surprised why I feel like I'm spreading myself thin. And I have a problem not saying no, but I think when you've come from a place where you found it very hard to get into the industry, once you gain success in the industry, you really want to hold on to it. And I have this fear of turning down opportunities because I know what it's like to not have them. But at the same time, you can't just say yes to everything, because when you say yes to everything, you're not going to be able to give your all to anything. It's really, really hard because I think everybody in your team needs to be on the same page about, you know, what the end goal is. And when I keep the end goal in mind, it's so much easier to understand what I should and shouldn't be doing. So recently I had a conversation with my management about the amount of commercial work that I'm doing. And I didn't get into this industry or this job to, you know, do commercial work necessarily. It was about educating people, about empowering people, like myself, and starting conversations. And obviously with a lot of the work that I've done and a lot of the conversations that I've been involved in, they're not really mainstream conversations, or they weren't mainstream conversations when I was having them in the beginning. And I think we've, you know, with George Floyd and with the transgender tipping point, we've definitely, you know, moved into a mainstream sense. And even, you know, drag has moved into a mainstream avenue. But I didn't get into this industry to you know, sell stuff. And I have been struggling with the amount of brands, struggling with the idea of the amount of brands that my name's attached to, because I was just like, oh God, I feel like I'm losing myself a little bit. So I think there's a lot to be said about checking in with yourself, because when you don't check in with yourself, you end up spreading yourself thin because you lose sight of the goal. So I'm really just trying to keep the goal in mind so that I don't oversubscribe myself.
Yeah. And just for people listening, like, what does checking in with yourself look like for you? Is it talking to a friend, a therapist? Is it writing in a notebook? Is it just sitting on your own and thinking?
I think it really depends on who you are as a person and, you know, how you get to your core. I think that's it. It's getting to your core. It's about taking stock of your life and asking yourself, is this who I am? Is this where I want to go? Am I happy with everything that I'm doing? I guess it's just having like a, what's it called when you go through a stockroom and like look at all of like...
Oh, like an inventory check.
Yeah, I think it's like a life inventory check. It's like just making sure that everything is pointed towards... you know, not the final destination, but the next checkpoint. It's a process. And I think it really involves your support network, because if your support network isn't on the same page as you, you can often find yourself being supported with things that you don't really want to do. So I had to check in to my management and just say, look, I know that work is great. And I'm really, really happy with everything, you know, I'm happy that I'm getting these opportunities, but I think we really need to be keeping close to the message. And as much as I love working with some of these brands, I need to make sure that it's in alignment with who I am as a person and what I want to achieve, and also the message that I'm putting out to other people.
Yeah. Your third piece of advice, Munro, is ask yourself if you're healing or just distracted.
Yes.
What does that mean?
So it's kind of similar to the previous one, but I wrote this to you guys before Michaela Cole's speech at the Emmys, but her speech really drove it home for me. And she said something about browsing through the lives of others to understand how we feel about ourselves. And also visibility somehow equates to success in this time that we're living in. And I have a very complicated relationship with social media. Some days I love it, some days I absolutely loathe it, some days I wish it wasn't invented. And I really want to go back to like a life where, with actual connection and actual social behavior rather than an illusion of both of those things. So I have a theory that we are all, well, it's not so much a theory as it's fact, that we're all traumatized people. We all have an experience of trauma within our lives. And we have the option of either healing from that, which is the difficult option, or we have the option of distraction, which is the easy option. And I think for many people that use social media in a negative sense, they've chosen the option of projecting their trauma onto other people rather than choosing the difficult option of acknowledging their trauma and healing from it. But at the same time, we all use social media as a way of escapism, of clarifying, trying to clarify and trying to understand the world, but at the same time becoming more and more overwhelmed by the world. So I think I just want people to prioritize the inner rather than the external, and not be afraid to go inwards and not be afraid to ask yourselves the questions rather than hoping that other people will answer them for you. I think that that's something that most trans people have had to do, that we haven't had the option. Not so much now where there's much more information out there, but a lot of my generation, I sound like such an old trans person, but you know, we really had to go inside. And, you know, I think all trans people have to go inside and, you know, ask yourself, is this what I want for myself? Am I going to be happier? Should I take this difficult route of healing to be who I want to be? Or am I going to take the easier option of distraction and of putting things off? And eventually the easier option doesn't end at an easier destination. It's just going to drive drive you into a place where you've been so distracted that you haven't dealt with anything, and you end up in a harder situation that you would have should you've chosen the harder option in the short term of healing. You know, it's like short-term difficulties for long-term benefits in healing, and short-term, long-term distractions for like long-term difficulties, I guess, if I've explained that all right.
You have, yeah. That, I think that's amazing advice, actually. Yeah, certainly resonates for me. We've just got to go to a quick break, but we'll be right back. We're back with Munro Bergdorf, who was just talking to us about, in your own words, sounding like an older trans person, and which brings us on to your next piece of advice, which is listen to your elders.
Yes, yes, quite. I've learned so much from listening to my queer elders, and I, you know, at the beginning of my transition, I just kind of, you know, I mean, it's like when you first come out as queer or whatnot, and, you know, you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and, you know, the bitter old queen in the corner of the club rolling their eyes at you dancing on the bar kind of situation. And I don't know, I kind of wish that I'd listened to my queer elders a lot more at the beginning of my transition, because a lot of what they told me would happen should I not be connected with myself and connected with, you know, doing things for myself rather than for society or for the attention of potential suitors, or trying to please other people apart from myself, you know, that it wouldn't put me in a good position emotionally and spiritually, physically or mentally. So, and also I feel like, you know, life goes in cycles, and a lot of what happened in the past will happen in the future. So I think there's a lot to be said with looking at how older generations dealt with adversity. So, you know, I mean, for instance, in America, abortion rights being wound back, I think that looking to how older generations fought for reproductive rights is going to help us fight for them again. I think that looking at how older generations dealt with and fought for trans rights is going to help us fight in this time of systemic media transphobia. I think that looking at the organization of older generations that didn't have the internet is going to help us in this time of internet censorship. I think internet censorship is a big reminder that we can't rely on the internet for activism and progress. We need to make sure that we are plugged in to real life mediums as well. So I'm just all about listening to queer elders. I'm about, you know, learning our history, because when we learn about our histories, we can learn about, we can understand the present, and we can safeguard the future.
I just think mixed age friendship groups are really underrated. I mean, I get so much out of just having people in their 20s in my life as somebody that's pushing 40, and some people that are sort of in their 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And especially being part of the queer community, I totally agree. I can learn so much from our elders, but also I'm finding at the moment that I can learn so much from the younger generation, and what I'm learning from conversations with like 15, 16, 17 year olds, it's just blowing my mind. So yeah, totally think you're absolutely right on that one.
I think that's also where, like, you know, a queer chosen family unit really thrives. One of my best friends is 21, and I've kind of become like his mother figure. But at the same time, I'm learning a lot from him as someone who is Gen Z. And, you know, that generation really see through so many of the things that we've internalized and struggle to process, struggle to see through. So, yeah, I mean, they're a massively liberated generation in many ways, having to navigate a world that has been very repressed and very, almost very linear, and they recognize that you know, the lived experience isn't linear. It's, you know, full of ups and downs, and, you know, the binary doesn't exist. And, you know, seeing through all of these structures that we just took as verbatim, and they're just challenging them, and they're seeing through them, and they're, you know, embracing them sometimes and disregarding them sometimes. I'm really, really impressed with them.
Yeah, same. What's your fifth piece of advice?
My fifth piece of advice is not everyone is entitled access to you. Yeah, I think it's about boundaries. I think it's about, you know, when I first came out and when I was younger, I really felt like I needed to put it all out there for people to accept me, because I felt like everyone had to accept me. I felt like everyone had to understand me. Everyone had to see my view. And, you know, to an extent, everyone had to agree with me because I was right. But at the same time, not everybody is entitled access to you, but you are also not entitled access to everybody else. And I think that that understanding, that the fact that not everybody needs to agree with you, not everybody thinks the same thing as you, not everybody has the same lived experience, is a really powerful piece of knowledge to pass on, because you stop feeling so frustrated with people and you stop feeling like everybody has to be on your page, because we all have our own journeys. We all get to where we need to go eventually, hopefully, but we all do it at our own pace. And when I first came out as trans to my parents, I was so adamant that they had to understand everything straight away. And it takes a lot of time for a parent to really understand a trans child if they've never experienced any trans people knowingly. So not everybody's entitled access to you, but you're not also entitled access to everybody. I think it's just bearing in mind that, you know, exercise your own boundaries, understand your friendships as they function, that, you know, some friends are going to be closer than others. Some friends are going to be able to take on more than others. But also, you know, you aren't entitled to complete access to everybody as well. And sometimes when someone can't give you their everything, there's a reason for that. So that's definitely helped me with my friendships, to not expect the world from somebody who can't give you the world.
Yeah. And you talked about friendship there, but also I think for people listening, like, not expecting that kind of everything or that kind of access from people that they maybe follow on social media, who they don't know, who they look up to, who are role models. I mean, you're coming at it from being in the position of a role model or a person of influence, but I think for many of our listeners, they might relate to that feeling of like wanting the person that they follow or the person that they really look up to kind of be everything for them at all times, and feeling disappointed or let down when they aren't. And I think it's really, as you say, important to remember that those people don't exist for you.
I completely agree with you. I think it goes back to like the first point as well about, you know, the fact that we're all going through something. The way that people react sometimes isn't personal. And, you know, if somebody doesn't give you complete access to them, then it may be because they're reserving their energy or because there's a guard up there, because they're actually going through something. So, yeah, not to expect the world from anybody, because, you know, people really usually give as much as they can. And if there's a guard up there or if there's defence there, then that's usually for a reason.
Now, I'm really intrigued by your sixth piece of advice, because it is, when people show you who they are, believe them the first time. What do you mean by this?
Obviously this isn't a hard and fast rule. I do believe in second chances, but at the same time, when somebody doesn't take into consideration how something that they do will make you feel, I think that it's important to take note. So when it comes to, you know, say you're in a relationship and somebody cheats on you, that's quite a stark example of disrespect. And or if, you know, you're in a situation in a workplace and, you know, you get thrown under the bus or that kind of, I think with severe situations of people disregarding how you feel in a situation, I think it's important to remember that so that you expect that. Rather than forgive and, it sounds so toxic, rather than completely forgive and go in blind. It's a Maya Angelou quote, and I don't think it's really necessarily about cutting people off as soon as you see that they don't behave in a way that you deem fully respectful of you. I just think sometimes it's more healthier to just take note and just say, okay, well, this is how you see me. This is who I am to you. This is how you see our connection. This is what I expect now. And that's what I try to exercise instead of falling out with people. And so it's not as toxic as it sounded initially. instead of falling out with people, instead of, you know, having massive arguments, when somebody disrespects me, I remember it. And I don't expect complete respect for them in the future. And also, I just won't share things with them. I won't be completely vulnerable with somebody who isn't going to respect my vulnerability.
That sounds very sensible.
It is sensible, right? And also, I just don't like personal conflict. I'll debate you on television. I'll, you know, have like dinner table conversations and talk to people that don't, agree with me, but when it comes to respect, that's very different. And I was talking to somebody the other day about, you know, talking to Tories and you know, how everybody, including Tories, deserve respect, but there has to be mutual respect there. And too often there isn't mutual respect to begin with. So when you come back to somebody who is supporting policy that is dehumanizing you, it's not a level playing field to begin with. But if there's, you know, somebody who is a conservative, and I'm not, and we meet each other with respect and it's respectful and they're open to changing their mind, I'm open to seeing the other side, then we can have a conversation. But if you're going to come at me and say that you support legislation and policies that are in direct contrast to my being, and you don't care about me because I'm the minority, you don't care about my community because, you know, we're a very small percentage of the population, and disregard the human cost of this policy, then that is active disrespect, and I'm going to expect that behavior from you. And then I think it's like, you know, it goes down that scale. So yeah, I think it's sensible.
Talk to me about your bad advice.
So my bad advice is, I just said Black excellence, because even though it's very important for us as Black people to see Black excellence and to see people that are succeeding, I think that there has become a pressure on especially young Black people to be the embodiment of Black excellence, when for other people of other ethnicities, mediocrity is somewhat often celebrated and is often in the room. But for Black people, we have to often work twice as hard just to get that, you know, the same response that mediocrity often gets for other races. So I want people to just not feel that pressure to be excellent at everything. I want people to feel like they are enough. Obviously, set yourself goals, set yourself targets, have dreams and ambitions, but to always put the pressure on yourselves to be excellent at everything and to only see excellence in spaces where for other people, we don't see, you know, white excellence all the time. And I think that it's good to see a spectrum of just everybody just living. And, you know, we shouldn't have to just see white excellence either. We should just see everybody as they are and celebrate everybody as they are. So, yeah, that's my piece of bad advice. I think that there's a pressure.
Yeah. Have you personally felt that pressure of Black excellence in your own in your own career? Yeah,
I have. But also, I think it's a pressure that we end up putting on ourselves, because obviously there's a lack of representation for people succeeding in their fields in the media and in society. You know, we often don't hear about success stories. But I think if we're only just hearing about success stories, then it then puts a pressure on people that don't have that access to that excellence, or people that have experienced severe adversity. So I think it's really important that, yes, we do see Black excellence, but that we also see Black adversity, that we see Black struggle, that we see the whole spectrum of the human experience, especially for Black people who are so marginalized and so underrepresented in the UK anyway. So I just want kids and the younger generations to understand that you don't need to be excellent to be respected, that you deserve to be in the room, and that everybody has a journey of improvement, and that you don't need to get it straight away. That I want to see Black journeys, I want to see Black struggle, I want to see Black success, but I also want to see that the journey to success isn't linear. I don't just want to see finished products of excellence. I want to see journeys. I want to see vulnerability. I want to see weakness as well as strength. I want to see the whole human experience, not just the finished product.
Absolutely. Wow, Munro, that was such a powerful piece of advice to end on.
Thank you.
That was really a pleasure talking to you, and I've got
through my croak.
Yeah, and even when you're not 100%, you don't fail to inspire. So thank you so much for giving your time to us today, and best of luck with everything.
Thank you for having me.
Munro Bergdorf is such a thoughtful and inspiring person. I've had the pleasure of speaking to her a couple of times, and she never fails to leave me with something to think about. I really, really enjoyed it, and I hope you did too. Thank you for being with us for this episode of Grazia Life Advice. I'll finish with the usual podcaster's plea. Please, if you've enjoyed the episode, rate and review Grazia Life Advice in your podcast player, and share this episode with a friend who you think might like it. It really helps us out. Word of mouth is so powerful. Thank you, take care, and see you next time.